As always, the goal is to use our stories to change narratives. Today, I'm joined by Queer Hero, the founder and CEO of the Oasis Project, an organization that promotes the positive representation and humanization of queer people in Nigeria. This person is a queer activist and an NSAIDS organizer. Without further ado, I'm Daniel, your host, and I'm doing free with Matthew Blaze. So thank you, Matthew, for coming on the show. I'm excited you're here. All right, so my first question to all the guests so far, how have you been? It's been a hell of a year, the pandemic. How is Nigeria? How are you doing?
Thank you, Dan. Honestly, it's been a mixture of many feelings, and because largely due to the pandemic and the recent killings of gay people in Nigeria and other parts of Africa. So sometimes I am happy, sometimes I'm sad, sometimes I'm hopeful, sometimes I'm hopeless. It's just a mixture of so much. So, like, when people ask me, how are you, I can't really describe it with one feeling. But at this point, I am happy. It might change another second. So, that's it. I'm grateful and I'm glad we are doing this, like, having this discussion.
Oh, good.
And thank you for holding space.
No, thanks for saying yes to this, Matthew. Like, You inspire many people. And speaking of inspiration, let's talk about your NSAIDS video that went viral. You know, what was it like? And I know it's something I've told you, you know, in person, but I wanted to talk about it, if you don't mind. You know, NSAIDS protests going on, you know, for, again, brutality against Nigerians. And then you went on raising the placard, Queer Lives Matter. What were you thinking? Of course, that was brave, but... Mind blowing.
What was I thinking? Honestly, I don't know what I was thinking at that point. I think I was just—I had no thoughts in my head, and I was just pushed by the support I had around me. I had me. I had some other people around me, and I felt like it was needed to do something, to do something out of the ordinary, which is people just chanting Queer Lives Matter, chanting NSAIDS just like that, and not being so interested in how it affects other people, especially the marginalized people. So, as a queer person living in Nigeria, SARS affects me in a different way, and it's crazy that a lot of Lagosians, a lot of Nigerians don't want to know. They are not concerned about how it affects you. They just want to end this oppression for them and for them alone, not for everybody. So it was important for someone to remind us that in this fight against oppression, we have to come from different directions, and we have to know that the oppression of a group could be different from the oppression of another group. And sometimes we have overlapping oppressions, and as a queer person, I'm also oppressed by xenophobia, I'm oppressed by some internal elements also. And it was necessary and urgent to call for the attention of other people, to the plight of other people. So I just did it. I don't know what was really going through my mind. I just did it. So yeah.
No, makes sense. And the key word here, urgent. You know, because I was gonna ask what the reaction has been like, you know, because I know something I said to you earlier, because when I went to the NSAIDS protests in London, you know, even with being in London and being open, I still felt a certain way to want to advocate queer rights in an NSYS protest, you know, and your bravery really inspired me, right? Because I was there, I'd written the Queer Lives Matter, but when we got there, I was like, oh my God. But then I just thought, Matthew did this in Lagos, right? What's holding me back? So I just raised it. And even the reaction I got, sort of reaction, right? I can imagine what that was like for you, because again, it's part of the wider conversation around, oh, this is not the time, you know, don't let us lose focus. I'm sure, how did you deal with that? You know, this idea that let's not talk about queer issues now, like when is the right time?
I think for me, I have internalized some form of bravery, and sometimes whenever I exhibit it, I don't even know I am exhibiting it. So this could be in just speaking to people, telling you have no right to talk to me that way. You don't matter if I don't matter. Just shunning people when they come with their nonsense. So I did that a lot during the NSYS protest, when people would come to me and tell me nonsense, and I would give them nonsense. So it's just like that. And when they come with the question, this is not the right time, when they come with the statement, I think it's actually a rhetoric they use in pushing people away, because it's not new, it's what they've been using for ages. And they just put quite people aside. Then we realize that there's nothing like the right time. The right time is any time. The right time is now. The right time is when I am oppressed and I want to speak up. The right time is when I am ready to speak up. So there's no time in the calendar to fight against oppression or to fight for your human rights. Every time is worth it. So for me, the answer to when is the right time is simply the right time is now, and we should always call out oppression every time, anytime we cite it. Even if it's not directly affecting us, we should understand that somehow it will come and bite us if we don't fight it. Because I feel oppression, different forms of oppression are intertwined somehow. That when we don't sort one, it will be very difficult to untangle it completely and be free from it.
Makes sense. Good, great answer. Yeah, right time is now. I think equality wasn't won, you know, when the oppressors felt it was cool, you know, like they didn't just wake up one day to say, okay, fine, I'll give you your rights. You know, it took people fighting for it. So yes, that makes sense. Talk to me about Oasis. Yes, so founder, Oasis, I see that's going well. And what inspired that?
So like Oasis was born out of the need to like structuralize my activism. The fact that I needed to reach out to more people, and funds are not really accessible to individuals unless you are an organization. So, with the social capital I have, I decided to use that. I decided to leverage on that and come up with something that would be beneficial to a larger community. Yes, I know I was rich. I know I have been reaching out to a number of people that I felt with an organization. I could access more funds, and accessing more funds would mean helping more people. So that was what inspired it really. And I don't really have deep thoughts on what inspired it.
Oh, baby grammar. Makes sense, definitely. Of course, you've created this platform based off your lived experience, and you want to impact lives positively. Well done to you, Matthew. My question is, I know you're a student as well. Listen, in fact, fighting homophobia is a full-time job. I know you have a company, and then you're... So, how are you doing all of that?
I think
You're human.
I just wake up sometime and I don't know. I feel this is like a toxic thing, but I feel sometimes I wake up and whenever I am listening, whenever I am not doing anything, I feel I am doing the world so much injustice by not speaking up. A lot of people out there are not speaking up, and if we don't speak up, the world keeps getting messier. And if I am resting, I feel I am not really doing anything. That's why I do all this work. I do all this work because I want to be active in doing something. I want to engage in ways I could help people. I want to engage in ways I could make the society a better place for me. Because sometimes I am my first inspiration. As a kid, I could not access some basic needs. And as an adult, I see kids who are unable to access these basic needs. And the first thing that comes to my mind is finding ways to help them to access them. So if I am resting, I feel I am doing the work so much injustice. I know that's possible.
I get that, you know. I mean, on the flip side, we want to get some rest and sleep, you know, and rest sometimes, but I get where that passion is coming from. Thank you, Matthew. Let us talk about coming out, right? I don't know the last time someone asked you this question, but when did you come out to yourself? Because again, you give this self-confidence, this self-love, you know, that people you may not even realize, you know, gain inspiration from. You know, people that may even probably, I don't know, throw you hate online. They might be inspired by you. So when did that journey start with you of coming out to self, like looking in the mirror, this is me, this is who I am?
The reason why I wanted to become a priest was actually clear to me. But my mom wasn't able to see me. She was like, oh, God called you. I am so happy. He did not call me. My new God did not call me anything. He did not say any words to me. I knew what I wanted. I did not want anyone to realize I'm gay. And being a priest would help with that because no one would ask me any questions. Matthew, why are you gay or whatever? Like, the Catholic priest and pastors, these religious people have so much power. They have so much power that people don't dare question them. So that was the ultimate goal for me. No questioning. I just wanted to do whatever I wanted to. So, but that did not work out. That did not work out because the conflict was so much and I thought I needed help. I felt I needed help. So I went to my priest. I told him that I was gay. And that was when I had my first confession therapy that did not work. And did the second one, the third one, and during the third one that something crazy happened. I started talking about my sexuality online, and at first I was talking about being effeminate, and I wasn't really chipping in the gay part of it that I am also attracted to men. People would come under my comment section and say, not all effeminate people are gay. Ma, I know how to be this not gay. Then I say, yes, I am not gay. I would say. Man, and the noise was so much. My display, I was very popular on Facebook. I would get tons of comments. And they would say, this one is not gay. It looks gay. It's not gay, and I'll be reminded I am not gay, I am not gay. So much in my head. At one time I was like, I was talking about being gay. That was when my priest saw that post and invited me to his office. He got to his office and he strangled me and he began punching me, slapped me, and asked why. And this priest was the one who was like, and the exorcism with me once. And he strangled me, he slapped me, he did so much to me that after that, I was so angry. I guess that was the anger I needed. That was the necessary anger. And I said, no. I think that was when I fully accepted and became so bad. But then I felt there were instances in my life where I would accept myself, then I would unaccept myself again. I would reject myself, accept and reject due to my sexuality. But I think I am past that point, like I am so far from that place where I would accept myself and reject again. No, not again. I think that answers the question.
Yeah, perfectly. Perfectly. I mean, nothing else. And sorry about your experience. Thanks for sharing that, Matthew. Your family. So I saw this video on Instagram that you shared with your mom, and that hit home for me. Like, because everything you were saying with her, again, is just a conversation I've had with my mom around. You know how they deal with the shame, and sometimes they try to center themselves in our experience. And I tell her, the only time you have to deal with this whole homophobia thing is when your friends bring it up, right? Or church members. I'm the one who I have to deal with the experience like 24/7. So what was that like for you? Because that was quite intense, the conversation.
It was, and I was so angry that day. I mean, I went home finally after some months, and the first thing my mom did when she saw me was start crying. That I cried still rolling on the ground outside the house. And when she did it like this, I went inside, carried my bag and said, I am leaving. I'm not doing this rubbish with anybody today. So she started begging me and she asked me to sit, and that was where I had that conversation about it, my sexuality. So we had that conversation that day, and actually I felt the emotions reaching me. I felt everything. I felt like I was the fact of so much love, and she wasn't seeing it really. She thought she did so much to me. Yes, I know she did so much. She did so much for me. She did so much. But I feel those are their duties, and they should do them. And they shouldn't put me through that stress. But they did put me through that stress. And I had to fend for myself when I was little. So the sense of entitlement that wasn't coming from her wasn't so interesting for me, because I had to fend for myself at a very tender age. I wasn't born into a rich family at all. My family was so bad, so we're very, very poor right now. So the sense of entitlement was actually what got me angry again. But then we just finished that conversation. I kind of remember it again. But I left that evening, and she said, okay. She apologized to me for everything I went through when I was little. And I thought she was okay, finally. Only for her to start the game of community on and that. But at this point, it'll be fine.
Last, Abby. No, well said, Matthew, because, you know, I've had to set boundaries as well. You know, sometimes how, because they are parents or their family, we try to excuse them of their homophobia, you know. But at some point, you just have to say, if you can't respect me, you don't have to talk about it, you know, just setting up. I mean, I've had to block my mom on WhatsApp at some point because it was getting too much. I mean, things are better now, but you know your point around it's good one day and then you think there's hope and then they're back to sending you broadcasts. But you seem to be handling it well, and, you know, well done. For setting that boundary. Dating, I told you yesterday I was going to ask this question. Your eyes. Matthew, this one is, so I know, you know, I've seen your tweet around femphobia, you know, and obviously like fat shaming, fat phobia within our community, you know, these conversations that we should be having, talking about. I guess the question is, would you say these things have impacted your dating life? I don't know, are you single currently?
Yes, I am single. Right. Because at this point, I honestly don't want to be single. I would lie about that.
You're searching.
But then again,
you're single and searching.
I'm single and searching.
Amen.
So I feel it actually did. It actually did impact so much. And the fact that I am also openly queer and an activist plays a huge role in it too, because people are very scared. People are very, very scared, and they don't want to be with you if you are open about it. They don't care if you ever want to put them first, like, just put them in that place where they would feel safe, and they don't care. They just don't want to be with you. And also in Lagos, the fat phobia, the femphobia, you see that on dating apps, different dating apps, or after sending a picture to someone, you're like, I'm not interested in fat people, you have a fat dummy, I'm not interested in fat people. So just different nasty excuses. And then you ask, like, really, why are we coming up with these excuses? I feel they are deeply rooted in femphobia, love for them and they might dedicate them or something, something. And it's not just from the place of what this preference is. And why don't you want to? It's crazy, and I feel it also intersects like the beauty standard. If you are not up to a particular level, if you're not looking some way, you don't deserve love until you shed those facts away and this. And it's not a conversation we are really having in the community in Nigeria. That it's not an active conversation, but it plays the ritual in how people perceive others, how you accept them into your spaces. Because I've seen people to events where they would be like, they select people, so if you're not so attractive, they don't want to put you there. And you see people actively reminding you that you are not up to this, you're not up to that. So it's actually crazy, and I feel that happened to me because I go on dating apps and it's either, oh, Matthew, you're fat, or it's, oh, Matthew, I can't really send people, or oh, Matthew, are you that activist guy? Oh, sorry, then block me. Oh, Matthew, this, that, so many crazy excuses. And I've also thought about like the beautiful relationship I was supposed to have with people. I mean, we go on having sweet conversations, nice conversations, and like I'm this kind of person, I think good things will just happen whenever people are nice to me. So we have these lovely conversations until you get to the point where you ask me, are you girly? And then I tell you, oh yes, I am girly, then you are nowhere to be found. You've blocked me. And it's crazy. They actually don't know how it affects your mental health. And you come online to talk about it. Like, oh, it's a preference, this is that, that. And look, if it's your preference, we fucking cry. Cry takes nothing for you to be kind to me. I just feel a lot of us should know that. A lot of us should know that you should be kind to people, even if you are not interested in them, just be kind to them.
And I think that that's sort of the second side to the conversation. I mean, the first point around preferences, because I think we all have a lot of learning to do, you know, given how society is built anyway, like structurally. So when people say it's preference, I guess it's, are we doing enough to interrogate our preferences? You know, because you're saying you wouldn't date someone because they're black, trans, fat, or things like that. It's like, you know, have you met every trans person, do you know what I mean? It's like, but also you're aware of the society you live in, you know, that, you know, it's just, again, that preference is rooted in prejudice 9 times out of 10, you know, so have you gone on that journey of interrogation? But I think the second side is just being respectful and polite, so definitely, you know, and I think it's also less about our preferences, but how we talk about those who don't fall within those preferences. Do you see my point? You know, it's like, yeah, but I think your point around, as someone who is at the receiving end of it, because it's okay to just, I don't date someone, but someone is listening to that and someone's life is being impacted by just that statement you're making. So mental health, you know, as someone who do a lot, you're openly queer in a country like Nigeria and you're very passionate about your activism, how have you been looking after your mental health?
So, during school session, just shut my door and feel some kind of peace at that point. I don't know what more to do, because your life is in so much danger, and you're trying to do yoga, you're trying to do something. It doesn't really make sense for me. It doesn't work for
them. Right. So you've developed your own like survival mechanism. I mean, in a place like Nigeria.
I don't know. I just keep running. I've not really figured out my survival mechanism.
Right.
I just keep going.
No, makes sense. So our last question for this segment. You're in Nigeria. But as someone younger, right, in Africa or a place around the world where, you know, they can't live free, what do you have to say to that person, you know, someone who's probably still struggling way early on their own journey of self?
I like telling people to really love themselves, because I feel loving ourselves is the beginning of goodness. So when love ourselves, we start manifesting the beauty that we are. And young, well, people should actually love themselves. Should know that everything about them, around their sexuality, is beautiful. And they shouldn't have to go through so much danger.
Thank you, Matthew, for coming on the show. Really appreciate. I'm sure someone is going to watch these and gain, you know, validation from it. So thank you for sharing your story, and thank you all for watching. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Till I see you next time, keep living free, keep feeling free. Goodbye.